Hi, I'm James Schillinglaw aboard Sea Cloud Spirit, and we've had a marvelous cruise. We're on the last day, and one of the great things about this cruise, they have some great lecturers on board. And I'm here with Les Standiford, who is an author and gave some wonderful talks about the history, a little bit of the related history of this ship, but also of Florida tourism, and he's got some great books if you're interested, and we're going to talk to him about that. And we're going to talk to him, Les, about that and a whole lot more on Insider Travel Report. Now, Les, first of all, talk about your background. You're an author of many books. You're also an instructor and writer with Florida, I think. What's the university?
Florida International University. We're the state university in Miami.
Okay. So you have that. Now, what are some of the books that you have written that we may be familiar with? Because I looked down and I was like, you have a lot of stuff, right?
Well, the book that is nearing its 40th printing is called Last Train to Paradise. The tells the story, incredible story, of the building of a 153-mile railroad across open water, largely from Miami to Key West.
And I have seen that by Flagler. And then he, of course, was very responsible for a lot of tourism in Florida, you know, because of all the hotels he built along the way, right?
I very nearly called the book The Man Who Invented Florida, because before Flagler, you could draw a line across the state somewhat diagonally from Jacksonville to Tampa. And south of that line on the maps of the late 19th century, it said Terra Incognita. And because no one knew about it, there was nothing there. Miami was a city of an outpost of about 100 people at the time, and there was no way to get there except by boat.
Yeah, and you then you took the railroad, and I have seen it, all the way to Key West, right?
Eventually he did. He came to St. Augustine in the 1880s, enjoyed it, came back with his second wife who thought they needed a grander hotel. He built a Ponce de Leon hotel, still standing as the old main of Flagler College there, and then realized that they needed a better railroad from Jacksonville, 40 miles south, to St. Augustine. So he bought the existing three lines, melded them into one, and the Florida East Coast Railroad became a reality. And then that process continued on down the state to Ormond Beach, to Palm Beach, to Miami, and ultimately from Miami to Key West.
And then, of course, he had some properties along the way. Some everybody might be familiar with the Breakers in Palm Beach, right?
You can still stay at the Breakers. It's a trip into the past. And about a mile directly across the island from the Breakers is Flagler's home of Whitehall, which has been meticulously restored, a gorgeous museum. And between the Breakers and Whitehall, you get a real sense of how the other half lived 100 or so years ago.
No, it's a very incredibly interesting. I'm interested in this entire period. I love old hotels and the whole story about the line. Of course, now we have the Brightline is kind of along the line that was where Flagler's Railway was, right?
That's right. Well, Wes Eden says that reading Last Train to Paradise gave him the idea to actually build the first private railroad since Flagler's days. And I just rode the first high-speed train from Miami to Orlando, which in a couple of years will go on to Tampa and and eventually Jacksonville, and we'll stitch the whole state together with high-speed rail.
And what did you think of it?
It was fabulous.
Yeah. I did it myself just from Miami to Orlando as well, and I was very happy. I did it initially just from Fort Lauderdale to Miami, but now the extension is built to Orlando. It's pretty cool. So I wonder what Flagler would have thought.
Well, Flagler would have been pleased that someone else thought he had a good idea.
Now, the other thing is we actually stayed in a property that had, I think, some influence that he had, the British Colonial in Nassau, just before we got on this cruise. And it recalls that kind of era as well, right?
Yeah, it's true. Flagler had visions for the whole Caribbean, and he built the British Colonial Hotel in 1901. It burned down and was rebuilt in the 1920s, looking pretty much today as it did back in the 20s. But he was responsible for that and still has a great deal of that same old world charm.
Absolutely, and they just renovated the whole thing. It looks like it, you know, sort of throwback to what it was. They've done a marvelous job of renovating it. Now, of course, the other thing in your talk that you give a little bit about is Marjorie Merriweather Post, who was the woman who helped build the very first Sea Cloud, who is just still in spirit, still in service today. It was the first of the Sea Cloud Cruises line. Talk a little bit about how that happened, how Merriweather Post built the initial Sea Cloud. I think it was in
1931, I think. 31. She was commissioned. Marjorie was married to E.F. Hutton at the time, and Marjorie herself was one of the richest women in America. She was the heir to the Post cereal fortune. Her father had invented Postum, the instant.
So she really didn't need E.F. Hutton.
No, she really didn't. She had been married before. It was unfortunate, sort of a practice marriage, didn't last, and was married to Hutton, whose wife had died, and the two of them met, the sparks flew, and they were gorgeous. Very well-known couple. They epitomized the Roaring Twenties. They came to Palm Beach in the late teens and fell in love with it, and they ended up building, well, Mar-a-Lago.
Well, we're going to talk about that in a second, because that's another story, because it all kind of ties together. I'm sure they probably stayed at the Breakers, right?
I'm certain that they stayed at the Breakers, and they built themselves a smaller house before that grand mansion that they built. And they were members of the Everglades Club and just became enamored of the place and its beauty. And then Miss Post became really the center of the place. She was a very gracious woman and very much interested as a hostess, not in showing off, but in sharing the largesse that she'd accumulated. She used to go up into there was a little hidey place on the second floor that overlooked the grand entry of Mar-a-Lago, just so that she could witness the looks of astonishment on the faces of the people who came in and saw the nature of the place. And she wasn't doing that to make herself feel better. She was doing it to allow people to enjoy and appreciate that kind of impossible grandeur. She really enjoyed sharing in that way.
Well, indeed, you have written a whole book on the history of Mar-a-Lago and kind of you call it America's Xanadu, which it really fits. And she was the original. Of course, we know the owner today, who is Donald Trump, right? Yeah.
Well, I think he fell in love with the place. I think that's why he's fought so hard to stay there. Even he realized that he wasn't going to be able to afford to keep this place up, because $2 or $3 million just to keep the lights on and the paint from peeling off. So turning it into a private club has allowed him to stay there. And I think that's one of the things he takes real personal pleasure in, maybe one of the few things that he, outside himself, that he really enjoys being in, because it's an otherworldly place. To walk in there is to feel like you've entered another dimension of luxury, and to imagine someone actually lived in this place.
Now did Marjorie Merriweather, she built it, or did she just buy it?
No, Marjorie Merriweather Post conceived of it and had it built, and her architect was not really an architect. He was a stage designer. He had mounted the show of the Ziegfeld Follies and conceived of the place as a kind of Alibaba wonderland. He knew a little bit about architecture and design from staging stage plays, but this was the first building of any consequence that he had been involved with in the United States, and he had free rein. He had all the money that he wanted to create this place, and he let his imagination run wild. It was like an enormous stage set in which people were going to live.
And when was it first opened?
This was in 1926.
So this was that was built before this yacht, the yacht that is the original Sea Cloud, right?
The Sea Cloud was something that came along later, yes.
Well, I can't believe that she built Mar-a-Lago and then she went ahead and built what was then, I think what the original name was, Hussar 5.
Hussar 5. They'd had a smaller ship along the same lines, but about half the size, called the Hussar 4. And as they their family grew, they decided, and they did spend a great deal of time, up to 9 months a year, aboard the ship. They loved it. It gave them privacy. It kept their children safe. The Lindbergh kidnapping had taken place around that time. They were worried about the safety of their daughter, Dina.
And that's it. Dina Merrill is their daughter, right?
Dina Merrill, yeah. Became a famous actress, married to Cliff Robertson, who became fast friends with Marjorie Meriwether Post. In fact, he delivered the eulogy later on at her funeral.
Now, and of course, she'd really poured a lot of money into this original yacht, Sea Cloud, which you can still sail to as part of this line today. We're on the third ship of the fleet, which actually was just built. This one was built in 2021, so it's really, and then there was a second Sea Cloud too, but the original Sea Cloud you can sail on today, right?
That's right. It cost about $1 million, and the conversion would be about 100 times that. It would cost you $100 million or so to build the Sea Cloud today.
And we just saw a presentation, another presentation by the cruise director about all the decor that they had in that ship, and then that ship eventually even served in the U.S. Navy, right?
For a while, it was painted, its masts were removed, painted gray, all the lovely trappings, of course, taken away. There were maybe 20, 25 staterooms at the time. You could carry a crew of 50 or 60 and a passenger list of maybe 50. And during when the Navy had it, there were twice that many people living on board. It served mostly as a weather station, wasn't fired at. They did sight a submarine at one point, and actually received two or three commendations during the war.
Of course, the other thing is that ship, for a while, it was owned by the dictator of the Dominican Republic, Trujillo. His son had it. We were just learned in over in California for a while. So it really saw a lot of service. And then eventually, somebody got the idea they're going to turn it into a cruise ship, right?
Yes, and it's interesting. Even Marjorie Meriwether Post learned after she got the ship, she leased the ship for its use as a weather station during World War II. And when it was returned to her and refurbished, she realized that it's actually the cost of wages had gone up so much. You needed a crew somewhere between 60 and 100 people to keep this thing going. And she realized that it was absolutely impossible, even for someone of her means, irresponsible of her to spend the money that it took to keep up. So she began to look for a buyer, and it was difficult, but she and her third husband, Joseph Davies, had been friendly.
She married well over the time.
Oh, yes. He had been the former ambassador to Russia,
right.
Influential Democratic politician and friend of FDR, and had met Trujillo during the Second World War, and remembered that he had quite a fortune, was interested in things, and approached him, and they ended up, she traded. It was really pretty much a trade. I think she might have got a little bit of cash out of it, for a Viscount turboprop airplane that Trujillo owned. They traded. She got a jet, and he got
a yacht.
Sea Cloud. That's right. And it fell into disrepair. It turned out he didn't take much interest in it, and his son used it as kind of floating hideaway, playpen for him and various mistresses. And once Trujillo was assassinated, the ship was expropriated and then sold off to private interests, and eventually made its way to Germany, where the fellow had the idea to turn this magnificent ship back to its former glory and turn it into a cruise ship.
And that's where the Sea Cloud cruises started. And of course, the ironic part about it is that the original Sea Cloud, the one it was the Hussar, was actually built in Germany, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So it's a fascinating history, and you delivered a great lecture on this. I think you have another lecture today on another topic, but you know, it's amazing how all these threads come together, both for the history of Florida tourism with Flagler, and then obviously for the history of the Sea Cloud cruises and the Sea Cloud yacht with Marjorie Meriwether Post, and then of course we were talking about the wonderful mansion that you write about in your book too.
Well, it's fortunate that we have these reminders of a time when dreams were unbounded and people could, in fact, make the kind of money that made a place like Mar-a-Lago possible. And it's not so important that very few of us are ever going to live in a place like Mar-a-Lago, but walking through it is a sort of inspirational experience, a bit like going to the Taj Mahal. I don't think we're going to live in the Taj Mahal, but it's the sort of things that creates dreams. I'll be talking about the history of the American circus this afternoon, and whether a little child who went to the circus with a grandparent ever aspired to be a lion tamer or a circus trapeze performer, what they saw, the astonishment that those experiences created, gave them the impetus, the thought that I could be something, I could do something special. My life is not bound by the ordinary.
Well, absolutely. And how you weave all these stories together is just amazing. For me, it was fascinating to hear all about all these topics. Now, where can we go out to about 126,000 travel advisors who, you know, clearly are interested in the history of a lot of the travel they sell? And this is obviously incredible history here. Where can they go to find out more about what you've written and find out more about how to get your books?
Well, all those books are pretty much available on Amazon, 25 of them.
Fantastic. Well, you really got to do that if you want to hear anything about the history of some of the places you sell in Florida, about the history of this incredible Sea Cloud Cruises. It was amazing to me to hear all these grand stories that you told. And now I got to go back and read your books because I want to find out about more about Mar-a-Lago. I want to find out about Flagler and all that because I love these older hotels and the incredible. And now we have, as I said, the birth of a new line that's going up and down the Florida coast, exactly what Flagler decided he wanted to do, right?
That's right, James. And I appreciate your time. I thank you. I hope you'll all go out there and find more about this. Florida doesn't have a lot of history because it's only been developed for 140 years now. But what it is very colorful, very exciting, very interesting.
Well, go take a look, find these wonderful books, and you'll find out about them. And you know, someday you can come on here and listen to Les. Hopefully he'll come on board again to do another lecture, right?
I'm signed up to do this same cruise next year.
So. There you go. So you're going to come on board and listen. I'm personally, now I want to go hear about the circus and all the other things in Florida.
I'll see you there.
I'm James Schillinglaw, and this is Insider Travel Report.